G'day, Toy Power. Frank here. Look, just so I let you know, our schedules just did not work this week. We tried. Ben was away, Trent was away, and Scott and I just couldn't make it happen. So we thought today we'd pull out one of our old episodes out of the vault for you to all have a listen to. This goes all the way back to episode number 160 with our good friend Damien, who comes on board to talk about Gem. That's right, that really pink, really strange answer to Barbie, Gem. This episode goes back so far enough that it features our good friend Darren. I know it was an episode he was especially fond of and one we've gotten a lot of great feedback on over the years. So please enjoy our chat with Damien and about all things Gem.
Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, I'm Trent, and it is wonderful to have your company today for episode
160.
This week on Toy Power, we have an absolutely wonderful topic, or should I say a truly outrageous topic. We're going to do a vintage toy line retrospective, and if we've got time, a bit of reading, watching, playing at the end. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Ben.
G'day, g'day.
Frank.
Wahoy, hoy.
Darren.
Hello, everyone.
And to help us look at this truly outrageous line, we've got Damien joining us today. Welcome, Damien.
Thanks very much, guys. Pleasure to be here.
It's all right. Wonderful to have an expert on Gem. We are talking Gem today, and we are getting the perms out. We're getting the brightly coloured costumes.
Flashing the shoulder pads.
Yeah. Shoulder pads, yes.
This is going to be so much
and
fun.
And the mullets.
The face paint. I've got a star on my eye.
Yep.
That's it. All ready to go.
I've been growing this hair for 6 months in anticipation for this episode. So super, super pumped. But Damien, before we get into Gem, and there's going to be so much to talk about on this episode, we've got to give you the Toy Power initiation, starting with your favorite toy as a 10-year-old.
Okay, I had to think back about this one. It definitely would have been, I think, my Red Ranger, Power Ranger.
Nice.
Power Rangers.
10-year-old, yeah. Yep. So that was definitely one of my faves. I remember getting that down at Coles and just thrashing it out. And so, yeah, that was good.
And was that the sort of standard version, or was it with the morphing action?
No, it was just a standard one. Yeah, yep. I was pretty jealous with everyone in that school that had those morphing action ones. So, yep. Yeah, definitely missed out on that one.
That's cool. And movie, okay. So, again, as a 10-year-old, did you have a favourite?
Look, I think I was still pretty much obsessed with The Labyrinth at that stage.
Oh, probably nice.
A bit strange to be holding on to that for like 10 years, but, you know, that was still pretty much my favourite and one of my top faves now.
I reckon that's an okay one to hang on to.
It's a timeless,
great one to hang on to.
Absolutely.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And in terms of Gem, I know some of these lines, you know, these 80s lines are very obscure when we try and collect them later on.
Yeah.
Have you got a local Gem find that you are sort of proudest of, I guess?
Well, it was about maybe a year ago. I saw a big lot of random toys on Gumtree and I missed out on it by one day, which that was completely crushed. I had a whole heap of mint in box Gem items and I put out another ad on Gumtree and I managed to track down the person that bought all of those and they very kindly sold them all back to me upping the price. So, yeah, that's pretty lucky, I think. So,
those Gumtree finds, they go so quickly.
They do.
Because usually they're dirt cheap. You know, people 100%. Are just trying to clear them. And it's just the feeling of missing out on a brilliant Gumtree lot is devastating. So to go back and actually get it.
Yeah, I was pretty ruthless. I was like, I'm going to do another post about it. You know, I'm going to find this person. And you know what? I guess persistence paid off there. So yeah, pretty happy with
that. Nice. Sensational work.
Well done.
Thanks,
well
guys. Done.
Fantastic. All right, we are going to get into our first topic.
Vintage toy line retrospective.
You've got to come back with me.
How did you get those wonderful toys?
You're an action figure.
You're lucky, Vintage.
Okay, and if you haven't worked it out already, we're doing a retrospective spotlight on all things Gem and the holograms. So, Damien, put yourself back in 1984 with the mindset that you of all people, are the toy executive of Hasbro. Congratulations, mate.
Yeah, that's quite the appointment.
Your job today is pitching the Gem and the holograms idea in a boardroom. What is special about Gem over all the other toys offered on the market of 1984?
Okay, well, I guess the big deal about Gem, we have to think back maybe just 2 years before MTV had just launched, so it was pretty new, pretty radical, you know, all those music videos, so that really kind of cottoned on to, I guess, the youth of the day. So there'd been nothing that was, I guess, edgy in this line of marketing. I guess it was only really Barbie in terms of other doll lines, and it was pretty, you know, pretty pedestrian, I guess. So it was all about, you know, just, you know, that flashy hair, you know, the music, the outfits, and I think that's really what it came down to. And I guess what I like about Gem is it just brought all those things together. You had the, you know, the music, the show, songs on the show were packaged back with cassettes that came with the toys, and you know, it was all a beautiful kind of multimedia aspect. So, you know, I just definitely, if I was pitching it, it'd be all about, you know, that big hair, big sounds, you know, back for the children of the 80s. So yeah, it was pretty radical.
I feel like it appeals to that rebel element type thing. As you Absolutely. Said, Barbie was very, you know, to coin a phrase, Susie Homemaker type Absolutely. Thing, whereas Gem was just like, don't care about all that. 100%. Get your hair as big as you can, as Absolutely. Big pink and bright colours.
100%. And I think really, like, that was the draw card. So essentially what happened with that is a guy called Bill Hyland, he came up with the concept, and he actually sold it to Hasbro just as a base idea. It was actually meant to be all-male rock band to begin with. So female lead and all-male rock band, but they suddenly realised that's probably not going to be the best way to market that. Yep. So turned all to female in the end. And kind of went from there. They really just, they really wanted that edge with it. And I guess it was pretty edgy for the time. And that's really pretty much where it started. And they just ran with it. So yeah.
What about the music? So music is a big part, obviously, with the cartoon series.
Absolutely.
The band is a big element.
100%.
The pack-in of cassettes.
Yeah.
What is your thought on how that music has held up?
Look, you know, considering that they had to pump out three songs per episode, which is quite a lot, you know, back in the day, some of them are actually not too bad. I mean, you kind of, you know, I'm used to them after hearing them for 30 years, but, you know, definitely some of them are pretty good as far as considering they're for a toy line. When you look at other music that's come out for other toy lines, the quality is not always there. So definitely they did a great job with that. They had a specialised team over in New York that did all the music offshore there, and then they just send them back over to the other side of the state. So it was a lot of back and forth across both sides of the US. So, you know, they definitely did the best job that they could with it, and I think it really has held up, and the fans do really love the music. And that's one thing we haven't gotten due to licensing, is an actual whole album of the song. So yeah, we've just got these tapes from 30 years ago, which don't sound too good anymore. Yeah, as you can imagine,
a little bit warped from the being on the dashboard.
100%.
So the toys came out first and then the TV show, is that correct?
So what happened, because of the backlash with your Transformers and your G.I. Joe of it being a 30-minute toy commercial, they specifically timed it so that the show would come out first, that it would look like, oh, the show's doing so well, we're bringing out merchandise at 100%.
Nice.
So they're pretty forward-thinking with that, which obviously came down to its downfall in the end, which we might touch on later with terms of competition. But no, definitely the show came out late 85 and the toys were out kind of mid-86. So there was a bit of a six-month leeway, and that's why in the show a lot of the designs that you'll see are pretty much based on a lot of the initial prototypes. So by by the time the product got to the store, it looked quite a bit different.
And just circling back, what were they going to call Gem before the Gem was
titled? So that's definitely an interesting point. So obviously back with the tie into MTV, they're wanting to call Gem M, just the letter M. Now, turns out you can't actually copyright a letter of the alphabet. So that had to change. I think it changed to Misty and then Morgan, and then it just ended up being Gem, because they had actually recorded the theme song with it being M. And so it was just so much easier to just
What works? What rhymes with M?
100%.
Gem.
Yeah, so they started the J and
Homer
the
J Simpson.
100%. They wanted just to tie everything back to MTV, they can't copyright a letter of the alphabet. So that's how she ended up being called Gem.
Pretty clever.
Very interesting. How many Gem figures or dolls were released in the life of the line?
So across both years, so 86 and 87, it was 27, including the three reissues of the Misfits, which were the villain band. So 27 across the line. So considering how far other lines go, it's pretty small, easy to collect. Some are obviously harder to find, which brings up difficulty a little bit, but generally it's a very small line.
Not a lot of variance within that?
There was a few kind of fabrication variants. The bigger variant from the first year was, so first edition Gem Jerrica, which is probably the most iconic one that most people would remember. She just had like the bulb, you know, little kind of LED little red bulbs you used for science experiments back in the day. She just had those as her earrings and they changed them to a star shape. So that was the biggest probably running variant of the first year. And then obviously there's Hasbro being Hasbro, there's, you know, things you find along the way, like kind of different shoe colours, different fabrication, that kind of thing, different face paint and whatnot. So,
And we'll get into the other things that were released, but tell me how many costume packs, because that was big with girls' line toys. So,
There's about 60 plus outfits. So again, that includes reissues from the first year to the second year, but 60, I think it's 61 or 62 in total. And once you get to the second year, that's where the big money is. A lot of those ones are pretty hard to find. So some can go for upwards of $700-$900. It's pretty crazy.
So you might be 27 odd figures to collect, but you need to get about 100 of them to showcase all the different variations and outfits. Yeah.
They're pretty relatively easy to find, like loose. When you're wanting to get them boxed, it's getting a little bit harder these days for sure.
So you ever like buy a figure just because it's got a jacket or like an accessory from one of the packs?
I used to back in the day. I've kind of tried to behave myself a little bit now, but you know, I did used to do that back in the day. You just get a lot that had that one thing that you wanted.
And beyond the accessory packs, mm-hmm. was there anything else? You know, we all remember sort of the Barbie dream house and the big pink convertible caravan. Was there anything else in that other than the accessory packs that they released?
She didn't have a dream house. Jem was, you know, too advanced for that. There was a few accessories. So there was the star stage. So that was the stage for Jem and the band. And again, going with that Hasbro thing of, you know, double duty in toys. So it was an air keytar initially. It's a cassette player and it also turns into the stage. And then that converts into an office for Jem's alter ego.
Oh, Jem. Wow.
As well. So if you're little,
wow, that's a transforming 100%. Playset. Incredible. Like, that's like a dribble changer.
That's it. Yeah. There was a rock backstager, which was an amplifier, and it opened up into like a backstage dressing room that you can store all the products in. Then there was the Rockin' Roadster, which was the car, and that's probably the one that most fans are pretty keen to get. That, as far as I'm aware, wasn't released locally. It's not in any of the catalogs. So I don't think that one was released locally, but yeah, that's definitely one of the high points of the line. That was actually manufactured in the US as well, which was a little bit different.
Wow, that's unusual for
absolutely.
That time. Yeah,
100%.
There you go. And the keytar and the amplifier, were they almost, you know, playable for the kids,
like,
you know, that you could
kid size,
pick it up and
100%.
I would have wanted, if I'd known there was a keytar, because I played piano and I was always jealous of the rock bands. You know, there's the guitar player, there's the drummer, where's the keyboard player?
Not in a rock.
You need a keytar, right?
Trent, would that have rivaled your ponies collection?
Oh, look, if I'd known about it, I might have had a keytar collection. So
it's always funny when you go back and look at these catalogue pictures, because that thing's pretty bloody heavy. And when you see these, like, five-year-old kids with it on their shoulders, I'm like, oh, that poor kid. Hold that the whole day there. So,
they now have back injuries,
100%.
So in your opinion, what are the holy grail pieces of the toy line?
Okay, so there's a few for what was manufactured. So in the second line, hologram band members, so you've got Raya and Shayna, they were released in smaller packs. So when you'd get the big pack, they'd probably only be like one or two versus five or six of everyone else. So they're pretty hard to find. And again, going to some of the fashion packs, there's a line called the Flipside Fashion. So they're the ones that are pretty hard to find. They helped you convert the doll to both alter egos, and they're the ones that can go up to 800, 900 for some of the secondary ones.
Wow.
Pretty tricky to find these days.
Yeah.
They are beautiful. I just want to touch quickly on the packaging. I think we do have to touch on that. It is beautiful. It's very 80s. Absolutely. I mean, it's that pink and yellow predominantly. But the brilliant part about it is the illustrations absolutely. On there, which is you know, for artwork, as artwork goes, I mean, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think that really makes the box
absolutely.
Art.
Absolutely. It really gives that, I guess, that feeling of what the line's supposed to be. So the artist of all of the doll packaging, her name was Sharon Nettle, and she still says today Hasbro paid her so much for this artwork that she bought her first house purely on this artwork. So we don't have figures, but yeah, that's the story she's saying. Now, what she did was, this would never happen these days.
Yeah.
They actually got models in, real live models, and she mocked up their outfits and got wigs made, and she drew from life. Yeah. So I think that's why it's got that real kind of energy behind it. So no, but definitely I love the packaging artwork. Obviously it was on all the VHS tapes, the Australian ones as well, and it's just it just really brought everything to life. And I think, look, they're not the prettiest looking things in the world, so I think the packaging really kind of helped to sell it at retail as well. And a lot of the fans love these days, so just the amount of work. But again, you look at any other Hasbro line, Transformers had beautiful packaging artwork. Yep. So
that was synonymous with 80s toys in general. Correct. Like it's a lost art in today's market, that people would rather take photos of the product inside than actually draw the, you know, a artist rendering of you know, them in action, so to speak. And it's definitely lost art, and I massively appreciate it. I just look at it and I think Alex Ross, you know,
it is.
So lifelike.
Absolutely. No, a lot of work went into it, and obviously with, you know, Instagram and Facebook these days, it's getting a lot easier to reconnect with some of these artists. And it's just some funny stories that you hear. So obviously some of the packaging we've got here is first year packaging, but for the second year, same artist drew all of these illustrations, but Hasbro thought it was too edgy, so they got someone in-house to change the faces around. So that's when this artist pulled away.
Wow.
So obviously she's got quite upset about that, that someone's essentially defacing her artwork. Yeah. So yeah, there's just a lot of stories and backstories there with that packaging artwork. So yeah, very, very so interesting.
Always fascinating when you hear the behind the scenes of what made a toy line what it is, and often the politics that goes into that as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, yeah, with any line, there's always that... all the obviously different, you know, competitors trying to one-up each other and all of that as well. So, which is pretty interesting when it comes to Gem too.
So we're talking 80s toy line, of course. Merch is the big thing in the 80s, right? So absolutely. Not just anything of the figures, mugs, sleeping bags, whatever. Talk us through some of that. Was it everywhere?
It was pretty much everywhere. So you got your main things, so VHS tapes, colouring books, storybooks. You had kind of like toiletry products, the sleeping bags. I could go on. The one thing they didn't make was earrings, which I think that was...
Oh, okay. Surely that's a no-brainer.
100%.
Is that something that you'd now see on Etsy?
You don't want to type in Gem on Etsy, because you'll be flooded with flashing earrings. So, 100%, definitely.
What's your favorite? Like, you brought a lot of merch in tonight for us to preview. What's sort of that one that stands out for you? Like,
I think in terms of like kind of extra merch, probably the coloring books and the storybooks. Again, they had fantastic artwork. They used a lot of renowned fashion illustrators to illustrate some of those as well. So that, I think they've held up a lot over time. My latest find was the sleeping bag about 2 weeks ago. My first vintage sleeping bag. I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with this, but I can't just leave it up on eBay. I have to grab it.
I'm not shameless to say we've got a Sailor Moon sleeping bag inside.
Very nice.
My wife's a bit of a Sailor Moon fan, and I found a Transformers one a while ago that I passed on to Sean Fuster. So.
Oh, man. It's just
something magical about that era of sleeping bags.
Absolutely. If they could put the likeness on something, they did.
No shame at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of like Krusty the Clown and the Simpsons.
Prove anything. 100%.
So what do you think it was about the animated series that made it so popular?
I think, again, it was just, it was something different. Like, it, you know, obviously speaking to that MTV era, there was, it had like the music videos spliced through the action of the show, kind of going, talking back to what was actually happening. And it had the little kind of, you know, subtitles with this, you know, the title of the track, you know, the artist's name. So I think that really made it feel current. And again,
like a music clip,
And this is my sister was into Gem for a little bit, so I have sort of some memories of it.
Liar, it was you.
It's Frank's ponies line.
and I one thing that I remember is mid show, it was almost like a Disney thing where they'd go into song, but you would have the artist and the name of the song down the bottom, and it made it feel exactly like that MTV.
And I think for me personally, well, again, back in the day, so the head writer, her name was Christy Marks. She wrote a lot of some of the other Hasbro properties as well, and she created the Bible for it. And what they were worried about, so when Gem first started, it was on something called Super Saturday, Super Sunday, and that was a show that had three separate toy lines. They only had basically like 10-minute bursts of each show at that point. So I think it was Inhumanoids and Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines or something along like that. And then you had Gem in the middle. So you had two kind of boy predominant properties either end of it. So they were really worried that the boys were going to take the remote controls out of their sister's hands and change over the station. So Gem had a lot of kind of action cliffhanger elements in it as well. And that's what I really loved, because it wasn't too girly, quote unquote. So yeah, it had a lot of the action. You had the kind of the antagonist with the misfits. So yeah, I think that's what made it so interesting. You had these two kind of your typical kind of heroes and villains, but just set in a kind of really modern, well, for 80s time, really modern storytelling of kind of like what was actually happening in that era. So yeah, I think that's kind of what made it so interesting. It was just a little bit different.
And we spoke off air before about the about Rio, the love interest character, and some of the controversy around
100%.
That
100%. I guess when you think about it, so technically Rio was in a love triangle with two people, because so Gem and Jerrica were the same person. So Rio was the road manager, Jerrica was the band manager, but she was also Gem as well, which that was a secret identity. So he was obviously, I guess, getting it on with both of them, for lack of a better word, as much as you can for a children's cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, these days, obviously, that's a bit of a touchy subject, which is very, very understandable. But back in the day, I think it just added to that drama to keep the storyline progressing and just keep that secret identity going. So yeah.
And did the Misfits themselves do the secret identity thing, or they were just the anti Gem?
Just the anti Gem. They just wanted to, you know,
be more popular.
100%. And I guess the whole backstory is so Eric Raymond, he's the manager of the Misfits, and him, Jerrica and Eric both worked at a record company, and Jerrica's father died. He leaves her Synergy, which I don't know if you guys know, that's the big massive supercomputer
AI
thing. That's how Gem changes from Gem to Jerrica. So anyway, he leaves all of that, and basically it's just about who's going to get that record company back. So it's strange for a kids cartoon show, but definitely very different for the 80s.
How many episodes?
65, so just the
syndication
general
syndication.
I think they'd already gotten the message that the tour line was cancelled. So because the show was doing so well, they had to obviously get the syndication, the 65. So the show was still performing all the way through its run. It's just that stock was still on shelves. So that's obviously why everything had to kind of come to an end. So
now, just to throw you a curveball, I just thought of it just then. Josie and the Pussycats, how does that relate to Gem and the Holograms, and which one came first?
So Josie and the Pussycats, I believe, came first. I think that was the 70s.
Yeah, that's Hanna-Barbera, right? Yeah, that's in that.
And I think, like, they must have based maybe something on that. They would have had to, because that was the only other female musical band animation that
was it three was it. Gem three piece as well, like, or was it four?
Four. Yeah, it was a four, and then a five once you got to that second year and second wave. So yeah, I think that they must have had to have looked at that somehow. I think they're very different shows, but definitely they would have had to have been, that would have been in their mindset for sure, I think.
I think a lot of sort of toy lines and toy companies borrow from each other, whether it's purposely or just, like, you think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, like, it's just too similar. You know, Shazam and He-Man, you know.
Oh, there's definitely elements.
I think there's elements. I was just interested to to compare, so to speak.
Break it down.
Absolutely. And I think like Gem really did get copied quite a lot after that. So obviously you had the big hair, the rock band element, and that was the first time we'd seen it as a toy line. So
I'm interested. I know this was touched on in the documentary series The Toys That Made Us, but fascinated about Gem going up against the big Mattel property, which was Barbie. Obviously Barbie had all the history. Hasbro came along and they're like, well, you know, Barbie's doing it, playing it very safe with what it's aiming at, and we can come in with the rock band, the more edgy type of product. Can you talk us through a little bit about sort of maybe what went on? Because it's a fascinating story about competition and maybe some leaked information.
Absolutely.
And how that went down and really maybe had a bit of an impact on the gem sales.
100%. So essentially, as the story goes, as much as we know, so I think late 84 is when the concept was just being conceptualized at Hasbro. And by that point, through probably early 85, we don't know exactly how. The story that keeps on going around is that Hasbro had a box mock-up, which obviously has all those really bright neon colors, and that was somehow thrown away either at a manufacturing point or somewhere in the trash, and someone from Mattel actually found that and then brought that back to, obviously, you know, head honchos. And you have to think Mattel had Barbie already established, so they're like, all right, we're going to go into competition with these guys. So because all the tooling was already there, there was no extra pieces that had to be cast or anything. They actually got their own property, which was Barbie and the Rockers, out to retail before GEM,
which
killed it. So because obviously Hasbro was starting from scratch, so everything was being built from the ground up. Obviously with the toys that made us in the Barbie episode, they do touch on that, and you see some of those executives saying that, oh, she got the call saying that's what Hasbro were doing. We don't know exactly how, but yeah, that's definitely what happened. And it killed GEM because obviously Barbie already had that you know, that known personality in the market, and the price point was a lot less expensive, because when you're thinking about GEM, that was, well, 12.5 inches, so a bigger scale. She had the electronic flashing earrings, extra outfit in the package, the cassette tapes. So I believe, at least at an Australian level, so GEM was about $26-$27, whereas Barbie was about $11 or $12. It's a massive price difference.
And when they're paying the artist, you know, a house worth of salary, think about the money that could have potentially changed hands to leak some of that information. Not saying that happened, but, you know, like with this sort of thing, I mean, what would you pay to get the edge on the competition, get your product? Like, how much is that worth? Absolutely. And you wonder if really something was thrown out.
And this is all pre-internet days, pre-camera sharing, photos and things. This is dial-up phones and, you know, hey, I'm going to ship this, thrown away packaging.
What's your fax number?
Yeah, exactly.
Really interesting with that, so obviously that happened in the first year. So when we got to the second year, the big lead or theme was something called Glitter and Gold. So essentially they went gold with their record sales or whatever. So what Hasbro did was they called that concept Ruby Red, and that was on all of their documentation right up until lead time that was going to hit the shelves. So even when we find like little kind of loose heads or whatnot from a manufacturing stage, everything still says Ruby Red, and then in the end it was Glitter and Gold, because I'm sure Mattel would have, you know, seen that and come up with something, as they always do, tend to beat everyone to the post. So
oh wow.
So we've talked about why did GEM fall from popularity, like what
So I think there's a few factors. So there was the price point, which was a lot more expensive. Two things with the parents. They didn't want to shell out extra. So obviously there was a size difference. GEM was 12.5 inches. Barbie was 11.5. Parents don't love shelling out money to buy extra accessories that aren't multi-changeable across what their children already own. And obviously a lot of parents didn't like the look of the Misfits as well, maybe too edgy for the time, didn't want their kids playing with something like that. I think they were probably the
people walking around the streets, Ben, and the parents are like, be careful of them, you know. So, and now they're seeing dolls of them, like,
The thing that's interesting though is because this show was so popular, when the line got continued, they couldn't discontinue, they couldn't move it off shelves. Once it got discounted to 50% off, people were buying it in the cartloads, and it really did well. So I think the price...
People love a bargain even back in the 80s.
100%. Yeah. So I think it really was the price factor, and also they didn't really look a lot like what you were seeing on the show either. So I think that probably was a bit of a killer as well.
That's often a factor.
So if you were to... almost going back around to our first question, if you were going to make this toy line now... Yeah. What elements are you keeping and what are you altering?
So I think you have to alter the size. I think it has to be, you have to make it an 11.5 inch to make it multi-cross across what's already out there. But I think you have to keep the core elements, which is still that kind of that rock star vibe, the good band versus the bad band, the kind of like the big hair, the crazy colors. I think that's the core of it. And the music, which was really, really essential to the line as well.
Honestly, you'd be hard pressed walking down the toy aisle and not noticing that brightly colored packaging. I think that is a massive tick in the right direction. It's like Toxic Crusaders in the 90s, you know.
Definitely.
It's the brightest packaging I've ever seen. So definitely very eye-catching. So I think they got that right, you know.
Absolutely. I think they had to really research the neon dyes. I think it's the first time that they'd actually done something like that.
Something that bright. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
for sure.
So, Damien, do you change anything about the cartoon or do you leave the cartoon as is?
I think the cartoon was pretty spot on to what it needed to be. The only thing that happened towards the end of the run of the line, again, to save costs, they had to reuse a lot of the songs that they'd had created in the first two seasons, just as a cost-cutting measure. So there was a lot of reuse of songs, and sometimes they didn't quite fit into exactly what was happening storyline-wise.
Yeah.
And a lot of the episodes, obviously being a Sunbow property, were animated by Toei in Japan. And again, as a cost-cutting, some of them went to Acom, which I believe is a Korean animation studio.
Yeah.
And those episodes are pretty bad animation-wise. So you get character skin tones being completely changed and whatnot. So pretty crazy stuff in those episodes there.
Yeah. All right, we do have to touch on this point. Hopefully it's not too much of a sore subject, but 2015 film, there was a reboot attempted.
Absolutely.
I haven't seen it, so I can't comment, but I guess there is a bit of, I guess, conjecture out there how that film was received. Do you have any thoughts on it and where what the next steps could be to see it rebooted?
Absolutely. So I guess you have to think about the landscape of what's happened. So Gem was only around until probably like 88. There was a few things straggling on, at least locally, to probably early 90s. It got aired early 90s. And there was a drought throughout the whole 90s, early 2000s. So the only other thing that really happened was back in 2012, we got an Integrity Toys reboot, which made a higher-end Hot Toys type version of the characters. So everyone was getting really excited. It was gearing the 30th anniversary, and then we get news that there's a live-action movie in the works. And people have been kind of talking about that in the fan communities for quite a few years. It was something that everyone really wanted. I personally was not sure how it was going to get translated, but I still was like, I'll keep my options open until I see it. Essentially, I think it wasn't great. I think out of the fans, there's only a small subsection of them that actually enjoyed the movie, and I kind of feel like maybe they just felt like they had to just to tell Hasbro, look, we do actually still care about this property. Essentially, they turned it into more of a coming-of-age story. So it was Jerrica was, you know, discovered on YouTube and, you know, evil kind of record executives.
And they were younger, sort of like 15 sort of
teens. Yeah, which really, that was the other main difference. So these were like, in the 80s, are like strong women that were just, you know, doing it for themselves out there. And that was really kind of what changed. It was just these group of teenage girls. And really, to be fair, the only thing Gem is really its name. Everything else, it was stripped of what the core essence of what it's supposed to be. So there was a few things, like there was the earrings, there was a synergy type thing, but she didn't actually turn, like there was no holograms involved to turn her from one to the other, which I admit that's a pretty far-fetched concept to bring out these days, but I feel like you either have to, it has to be completely 80s, or you have to really stick to the core of what the toy line or what the concept is, and I think they just missed the mark on that. Bear in mind as well, Hasbro was only wanting to give it a $5 million budget.
It's not a lot, is it?
No, pocket change.
That's it. So John M. Chu was the director, so he did what he could, I think, with it. But yeah, I think it was just, in my opinion, it's like you either do it properly or you don't do it at all. I mean, I'm fine for reboots. It's always exciting to see what they come up with. But it's just, you do want them to get it somewhat right.
And so, there was no toys or sort of associated stuff with that?
No toys. I think the main actress, Aubrey Peoples, I think her name was, she said that Hasbro did cast a face mold for her. But I think because reaction was so terrible from the initial trailer, I think that everything got scrapped.
They sort of knew better than...
And
that's probably better for the long-term success of the brand, to sort of encourage people to forget about that iteration as quickly as possible. And remember back to what made it successful and what made it beloved since the 80s.
Absolutely, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, it seems... I mean, if I look at the She-Ra reboot that we're getting now on Netflix... And look, I think it's a great show, but one of the aspects I think resonates with that Gem reboot is they definitely went and made the cast a lot younger, and that's sort of when I think about the She-Ra of the Filmation era, you know, she's a really tough, strong woman, and all the characters seem
she's the most powerful woman in the universe, not the most powerful girl.
Yeah, well, that's right, but all the as a kid watching it, I didn't need to see other kids or other teenagers. I looked up to the fact that they were adults. That sort of resonated with
me.
And that, I've got a question where they sort of take that and change it, and they think that maybe kids will, it'll resonate more with kids because it's closer to the age. Yeah. Not always the case. Like, you don't need that stuff necessarily to be kind of dumbed down to that level. But it's just
I think when we were kids, those sort of cartoons and toy lines were very much aspirational. You aspire to be like them rather than you are like them. Yeah. You aspire to be like them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. Now, we do have to talk about the reboot, and I guess this is where Hasbro are sort of saying, well, we're not going to do a new line. We're going to license it to a company, and in this case, we're getting it back to Integrity Toys. That's now, right. I didn't know, before Damien came in tonight, I didn't know that there was this previous reboot. I think you said 2011?
2012, yeah, that was when it first started.
And that line, so if we just, we'll start with that reboot of 2012 Integrity Toys.
Yes.
How far did that line go?
So in the end, well, like I said, it started in 2012. So by the end of it, I think it ran until 2018.
Pretty good run.
Yeah. I think we got about 70 figures, which that's pretty huge in such a small amount of time.
Yeah.
So again, it was very different to what we'd seen the first time around. It was much more like a, again, most comparable thing with like a Hot Toys aesthetic. So very poseable, you know, interchangeable hands, like complete fabric outfits and shoes and whatnot, and much more of a realistic look as well. So they the inspiration behind them was the cartoon and the 80s box art. That's what they were trying to emulate with it.
Sure.
So that's why it's got that really realistic feel about it. So again, we hadn't had anything like this for going on maybe 15, 20 years. So it was really exciting when that first SDCC 2012 all those promo images came out, because we had no idea. So we were taken by surprise. So yeah, that was, it was a really, really great line. Obviously ran over those few years, and Integrity Toys do a great job with all their high end products. It was just, my only gripe with it was, again, it comes back to the kind of the era we live in, because there's a lot of noise on social media with so many people wanting different things. I think they tend to listen to that vocal minority sometimes in regards to what people want.
Definitely. So
a lot of the products we got were some things I probably wouldn't necessarily say they were iconic or instantly recognizable, but that's what I guess I'm hoping for with this little reboot that we're getting with that this time around.
Yeah, okay. So do you think they'll almost continue or redo a lot of what was released previously?
It hasn't been that long. It's 2018, you said it ended.
Yeah. So it's only really been like a 1 year kind of break in between. I think it depends what they do. So I know a lot of people that missed out the first time around want the kind of that iconic original Gem outfit. We got that twice over the first time around. So I'm okay if we don't see some of those things, but from what the wording, it's very vague of their press release. It sounds like it's probably going to be a 1 year deal. And I'd say maybe we get a few waves of maybe 3 or 4. So maybe we end up with maybe like 10, 12 products at the end of it. I'm happy to maybe then do a few versions of Gem, maybe one of the initial each band member. I think that's probably going to cut it for me personally. But honestly, anything that we get is always exciting. We're happy to take it, because there's just not much Gem out there in the landscape. So,
And what sort of price point are we talking for this? Because obviously it's a niche collectible line with small runs.
Yeah, so these guys here, it's generally between $119 and $130 US. So it's not crazy, but it is still up there, especially for local collectors, once you factor all of our price conversions in and shipping as well.
Yeah, and being a specialty product, is it the case that Integrity Toys, you have to sort of go to a website and order these, or how do you get your hands on them?
So they've got their own club called the W Club, so you sign up to that. They used to have retailers that you could get the product from, but basically what you do now is join up to the club, and then they give you set times of when they're released, which is always 3 a.m. Australian time.
We've been there, done that. Sounds like Matty Collector.
100%. So basically you get on, you have your membership. It's normally, I think you get one, you can have one per membership, and then you just get on three, two in the morning, and you just got to hope that you can grab it, because there's obviously a lot of scalpers with anything. So, and then when they hit eBay, they're 2-3 times the price as well.
Yeah. Of course, because they know with anything niche, there's a passionate fan base waiting to get their hands on it.
Absolutely. So that's just how the model runs. Yeah. So, and obviously then they do exclusives through the club that are made to order as well.
Right. And what else are the fans looking for this 35th anniversary? Like, what would you like to see, and what are the fans asking for, per se?
I think the two main things that keep on getting brought up, I think, is a repro of the original Gem from 85, 86. That's what most people seem to want. It's whether Hasbro is interested in doing it, and obviously we touched on earlier about will it include those electronics, you know, price point of doing that and whatnot. So I think a repro of that is probably the number one thing. And I think a lot of fans are unfortunately priced out when it comes to the Integrity Toys version. So something that's going to be accessible to most fans would be nice. Apart from that, people are really wanting an album of all of the music.
Yeah.
But a lot of the songwriters obviously didn't get any residuals from back in the day, and now they're really pushing. That's obviously through the legal system. They won't allow any releases,
of course,
unless they get their cut, which is fair.
And they would want their cut from back then as well, I imagine.
Yeah,
that would hold it up.
And I guess that's the thing, even like the head writer, Christy Mark. So once you go into Hasbro and you're contracted to them, anything you create, they own.
It's theirs.
So, yeah, 100%. Yeah, so that's the issue. So definitely a repro of the original line, and an album are the two main things that keep on getting brought up.
And what would you like? What if you had to, if you were the executive again, mm-hmm. and you were deciding, right, 35th anniversary, we're going big. I know what the fans want. They want...
I think we just do both those things together. I think a repro of that original doll, and instead of having a cassette, have some kind of downloadable
a link or something.
Link to you know, all of the songs from the show. Like, and just do it in a huge package. Maybe some like I mean, this would never happen, but you know, get that artist back, do some repro artwork, and freshen it up again. That's what I'd like to see.
Strange, you never know. She might want a new house.
100%, that's right.
Well, that's been fantastic. I mean, just to close, Damien's brought in some absolutely amazing things to showcase the line for us tonight, including a lot of the Mint in Box figures. There's even a super rare prototype. I wouldn't mind you maybe touching a little bit on your prototypes, but absolutely. There's also like a style guide. And I know, you know, we had Colin Betts on a couple of episodes ago talking about the style guides. And this is where they give you all that sort of key artwork that if you're going to market things, or you can use that sort of key artwork. But what's brilliant about that is it comes in a record.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like a record slipcase and all the art's in there. So it's that attention to detail that is beautiful. But I guess, Damon, you're a big collector of Gem. You've got a wonderful collection. And I'm always, and I've loved seeing the collection tonight, but I'm always super excited when I see a prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your hands on some very, very rare, sort of almost one-of-a-kind items.
Absolutely.
Do you want to just maybe talk us through that?
For sure.
It's fascinating.
So again, with any toy line, again, from this day, there was a lot of prototypes and unreleased product that never... made it to the shelf. So very lucky to have a few things. Obviously not a prototype, but that style guide is one of my like highlights of my collection. So again, just all that attention to detail, has all the artwork in there, so I absolutely love that. But in terms of prototypes, there's two main I guess holy grails that are part of my collection. So the first one, which I've shown you guys here tonight, so we had another band that Hasbro were creating for the third year, 1988, called the Stingers. So they were all blonde, so they were trying to kind of, parents thought their hair colors are a bit too wild or crazy, they're trying to kind of dull it down just a little bit. So they were all blonde characters, those ones there. So they were got to prototype stage. Now the whole set of three was found about 10-11 years ago now. I think it sold for about $11,000.
Oh, so wow,
pretty crazy. So they were found first, and then this loose one that I have of one of the characters, her name was Rapture. She was found in France, which was a bit of a head scratcher because obviously the line was obviously very US based. How that prototype got there, we don't know, but it's been verified, which is nice. So it has a lower back stamp on its on its back, whereas all the other ones that were produced have it higher up on the shoulder blades. So we know it's not someone that's just customized one or not, which is good. So yeah, it's all hand tooled. It's pretty crazy to have that. So there's two of those. So that's a huge part of my collection. The other one, which is probably the holy grail for all Gem collectors, is something called Rockin' Romance Gem. So that was for 1988. Now that one there got to a first shot or a pre-production sample stage.
Yes.
So it's completely in box as it would be on the toy shelf. So under 10 of those have been found. So I'm very lucky to have one of those ones there. So that's probably the holy grail for any gem collector.
So an unproduced, essentially production prototype inbox.
Yeah.
It's all painted, all decoed out,
Boxes that were supposed to be. And there is a rumour that there's potentially a box full of them somewhere. I don't think that's the case, only because how it's painted is not, it's not how I think a production model would be done. So I'd say it's probably still a sample at this point.
Yeah.
And the fact of if they were released in, like, say, Europe, which that's the rumour, I think we would have found some loose examples somewhere by now, which we just haven't. So
That makes a lot of sense. You'd think someone would surface with them on eBay. If they were that plentiful.
The one item, and I'll never get it, and I'm cool with that, but Jenny from the Bucky O'Hare line had the same. You can find, you know, a Jenny figure from the Wave 2 in the box. It was, you know, obviously a production sample. Who knows how many of them are out there, but it's obviously a really limited run. And so just the thought of acquiring something for a line I follow is just blows my mind. So to know that you've got that's just, that's wonderful. And that's so great that in Australia we've got a collection that has an item like that.
That's right. Fantastic. Amazing.
And in a diehard fans collection where you know it'll be appreciated and valued and respected, that's terrific.
Thanks, guys. I feel very lucky to have that one there. And I guess because this is really one of the only things I collect, it's a little bit more manageable to kind of acquire all of these things. Yep. So
definitely.
Just to circle back to the Rapture prototype, and you're saying it's a bit you know, like the France destination there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just to put it back into the Masters of Universe collection, where what we're familiar with, there were two laser characters released in France and things, and there were two giants that weren't really
Italy, was it?
Italy, France, Italy, fairly close.
Mexico.
They're fairly close, like
Europe somewhere, one shaped like a boat.
I'm just saying, what I'm trying to get at is, I mean, my geography is terrible, but aside from that, is they only got released in those parts of the world, so that is very unusual for the US people. Like, what, you know, Master Universe is United States, why wasn't it released?
Well, I think that's a function of the fact that it's died in the US. They've got a glut of product, and they're going, where is a market where maybe
where we can dump
it, and it will kind of get taken up, or they'll buy it. So I think that's the logic of why that happened, because they just didn't want to. They just thought if we put it on the US market, they'll literally
get one state
it,
and then
we'll have to destroy it or something.
And so the thing about Masters of the Universe in particular in relation to Europe, and why I think Europe was singled out, is there was no decline in sales for Masters of the Universe in Europe. It was still a top-selling line right to the end.
Right.
So if you're going to dump it somewhere, if you've got this product that you're partway through making for the world, it makes sense to dump it somewhere where people are still buying it.
Well, very similar to Masters. So Gem was wildly popular in Italy and France. So so much so that France's pre-Toy Fair 88 also has the unproduced prototypes, like the US version of the catalogue. So that's why I think there's that rumour that maybe there's some product there. But so definitely it's still carrying on that it was very popular over there, which potentially could be... I don't think there is any product lying around still. I really don't think so. But definitely it was really popular in Europe. So they were probably ready to start purchasing those items for sure from Hasbro.
Crazy.
Wonderful. All right. That wraps our vintage toy line retrospective. So good to have Damien in to talk about that, because that is just a wealth of knowledge that I've now gained and feel a lot better for it. Do we have time for
Let's do it.
Reading, watching, playing. All right, it is that time. We're going to shoot around the room to see what we've all been up to. We'll start with Ben. What have you been getting into? It's a bit of Lock and Key goodness there.
Yeah, I've been checking out Lock and Key, which is on Netflix. Our mate Phil on Breaking the Panel was plugging that, so I checked that out. And it's one of those shows I'm watching with my wife, so we don't binge watch it, which is sometimes what I prefer. You know, I like spacing it out over a couple of weeks or whatever. So I've got like one or two episodes left. Absolutely amazing show. Highly recommend it. It's based on a comic book series. The trailers I saw initially on Netflix made it very lighthearted and things. It's definitely not. It's quite horror-based and things, which is definitely my preferred taste and things, but that just made the storyline that much better. So loving that series. I'm even darker still. I've been watching, found the Purge series on Amazon Prime. So I've been watching that. Sensational series. I like those movies a lot. And I also found another movie. It was called Trap Room or something.
Escape Room.
Escape Room, that's the movie. Okay. Done by the same guys as the Saw movies and things, so it's got lots of twists and turns and sort of shows you the ending scene at the start of the movie, and then you work backwards from where they, how they got there, and plays all the way through the film. So it's really cool. Highly recommend
that
one.
So Ben's in a really good mood.
That's my taste in a nutshell for TV. So
nice.
Very good. Damien, have you been binging or enjoying any media?
Reading, watching, or playing?
I think we're going to be stuck with an 80s moniker with me, I think. So
nothing wrong with that. Bring it on.
So I've been watching a bit of the Dynasty reboot, which is a bit of a take on the 80s version. Actually, you know what? Considering as far as reboots go, it's actually not too bad. So I've been binging that lately. So yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yep. I'll second Ben with the Lock and Key. We only just finished it a couple of nights ago, and the fact you've got two episodes to go, I want you to film your reaction at the finale, because it's just when you think you've worked out all the twists, there's more to come. So that's really good. Makes me now want to go back and read the comics, because I never did. I know Travis Jones of the Blazing Defender Report, he was sort of a bit lukewarm on the series as a big fan of the comics, so I'd be interested to see that from the other side. As far as watching, I've been hitting up a lot of ABC Kids lately with Bluey.
Bluey, man. Bluey's good, actually
pretty solid. My favourite one is the dad basically is a bit like a Jim Carrey from Liar Liar, where he pretends his arm is like an ostrich, right? Chases the kids around. And then he's like, you know, starts annoying the wife. And he's like, it's not me. It's the ostrich, right? And then she's like, I think the ostrich needs to go for a walk. And the kid's like, yay. They put a lead on dad's arm. And dad just looks at the wife and goes, well played. I'm like, this is a kid show, but it's great. As far as playing, I had a bit of a rare kid and wife free night the other night, and I was like, you beauty, PlayStation, here we come. This sort of circles back to watching, because I spent the next 40 minutes waiting for all the updates to download before I could actually play anything. But that was good to finally get my hands on the Joker in Mortal Kombat 11 and just see how absolutely... He has a move where he gets two of the big punching, you know, extendable punching glove things, and he punches you in the face, in the guts, so you fall over, and then he just punches you both of them in the balls, and you're just like, oh my god, like, it's painful but hilarious at the same time. So yeah, that's pretty much me, I think.
So I've been a bit late to the Netflix party, as people in this room would know. I had some issues getting the internet, first of all getting it reliable, then moving over to the NBN, and then getting it installed. But the long and short of it is, we're there. I'm on Netflix, and I'm currently two episodes away from finishing season 4 of the new Shira cartoon, so I'll be up to date.
Nice. And
really, really enjoying that. Enjoying some of the mythology that's come out in that season. I feel they've really started to unpack, you Definitely. Know, some of that behind it, and really, really enjoying it, and looking forward to seeing the two-part final.
Yeah, I've been not consuming any media, and for those of you that have listened to some old episodes of Toy Power, have been writing a book for the last almost 2 years, I think, now. And I'm trying to wrap that up and get that finished and ultimately probably self-published via Amazon. So see how that goes. But what we've been doing, actually, funnily enough, my wife Leanne loves romantic comedies, and we don't get that much time together at night with the kids, and by the time, you know, someone falls asleep and that sort of thing. But we got the Netflix up, and I'm like, let's pick, I think it was Valentine's Day, let's pick a romantic comedy, and we watched something that
Deadpool.
Looked great. No. Die Hard.
Yeah.
Birds of Prey?
No, it looked great on paper, and I can't even remember the name of it, but it had Bradley Cooper.
A Star is Born?
No. It had Bradley Cooper. I'd never heard of it, right?
Yeah.
It had Bradley Cooper.
Netflix exclusive, or?
It could have been. Yeah. I can't even remember the female actresses, but they were, you know, really big names. It even had Bill Murray. Bill Murray was in it. Like, it was on paper, it should have been great. But she was so disappointed with it. Like, it was just had no substance and no depth. It was just very, very light. And so what we've actually been doing, funnily enough, is there's a function in Microsoft Word where you can have someone read back the text. So we sit there and we actually like read my book, like have it dictated to us and sit there. And it's fascinating because it's quite deep. I've tried to make it deep and philosophical and multi-layered. So when things happen, we can kind of almost talk about them, and she's got the author there to kind of explain concepts. So that's sort of what we've been doing at night when we get some spare time, which is really weird, listening back to my own,
book. How's the voice on those things? Is it very, like, robotic?
No, it's not bad. It's funny enough, because when I was doing it, the default voice is a male American voice.
Yeah.
And this is how I do a lot of my editing, is I put my headphones on and I have it play back to me so I can pick up a lot of grammatical errors I might miss looking at the text, right? So I play, and I was getting really sick of this voice. And one day I was fiddling around and I accidentally changed the setting to like an English woman.
Yep.
And she, like, I really like the voice. Like, it just works for the tone of my story. But she, in some words, she can't pronounce the N's. So I've got a character called Genevieve, and she calls her Givi.
Right.
So there's a few things like that that Leanne's just laughing at because the pronunciation's just
totally
wrong.
Different. Yeah, yeah.
Newfound is Newfund or something. So it's just, it's a bit wrong. But look, considering it's helped me with the editing, it's tolerable, right? Yep. Like, it's you're not going to be able to record it and put it up on Audible audiobook. It's not to that level, but it's tolerable.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's a valuable resource for the editing job at the very least, and a source of amusement for date night.
Correct. There it is. So that's it. So we're going to wrap this episode of Toy Power. But before we do that...
have you got something else?
No.
So I have... pardon me while I get my phone out here. There's actually something I want to read to make sure that I've got it. I'm not missing anything. So those who have been listening to us recently know about Rob McCallum's Action Figure Adventure. Is that
Action
the name?
Figure Adventure,
yes. Action Figure Adventure documentary. Now, we've all backed it. It's been a great success. I believe they reached all their Kickstarter goals and all that stuff. And I think I mentioned to you guys that the Breaking the Panel as a show actually backed the Kickstarter. Also, a good friend of the show and fellow Patreon, Phil Keating, was very excited. He'd followed Rob from the days of Nintendo Quest. Yeah. So when he started pimping our show, he's like, what? Two things I love are coming together? This is amazing, right? So anyway, so he got really excited and I was chatting to him and he goes, oh, mate, this is great. You're just going to blow up your show and you don't know what you've started here at the network. And I went, that's an odd phrase, but he's just excited. Two things he loves coming together.
Yeah,
cool.
About a week later, he hits me up, middle of the work day, middle of a Wednesday. I'm having a pretty crap day at work, if I'm honest. And he goes, can we chat? I'm like video chat? Yeah, sure. So I jump on there. It's not just Phil. It's Chris Wisdom and Charles McFall as well.
Right.
And I'm like, what's going on here, guys? I feel like this is a setup. And
Jesus.
And Phil starts going, look, you guys are really great. We love what you do. Everyone here at the network loves what you do. You saw that Breaking the Panel has, you know, contributed to the show, to Rob's Kickstarter. It goes a bit deeper than that.
Oh, wow.
They have kicked in enough money for you and me to have our collections and our faces, if Rob willing to, be on the action figure.
What?
And if you haven't worked out by now, I'm not reading. I just wanted to film your reactions.
What? That is amazing.
Yep.
So I've been
sitting on that for about a week, just going, oh my God. And Phil's like, are you recording? Are you recording? I want to see their reaction.
Yeah.
So,
oh, wow.
Oh, that's blown my mind. Thank you so much to the Breaking the Panel Boys.
Yes,
because that means the absolute world.
Yeah. So it was pretty much, as Phil worded it, he said, look, you know, you guys being in Australia, you don't get to come play with us and Dragon Con. You feel a little bit disconnected from the rest of the network. So this is one way that we can say thank you for the content that we're producing. And so we're going to be on TV.
Dude.
Or on the show.
Wow. You guys are insane in the best way possible. Cannot thank you enough. And Frank, how did you sit on this for like a week? Must have been hard.
I imagine
you've been talking to Ali about it, because who else can you talk to?
Pretty much, exactly, right? Yeah. So there you go.
That is fantastic. Looking forward to that. That is going to be epic and Well, I think there's going to be some great toy rooms showcased in
for
that.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I believe.
Never know. Some of us might actually become stars of the screen. You never know.
Yeah. So I believe Rob is going to be in touch about, you know, the technical requirements. But fantastic. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Wonderful.
That's the thing.
Thank you so much. A massive shout out. And thank you to Damien for coming on this episode.
Thank you so much, guys. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Or should I say it was truly outrageous.
Yeah, truly, that's truly.
That's it. In a segue to that, where can everyone find you on the social medias?
So you can find me at, it's a bit of a long name. It's at truly_truly_truly_outrageous on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. And I follow Damien. It is wonderful to have those pictures. They are beautiful that when they do come up. A lot of gem related.
You're almost a daily post, is that right?
Yeah, it's a bit two times a day now. I think I might have to pull it back. Pretty much, almost daily posts. Yeah.
But if you want your gem fixed, definitely recommend getting on the Instagram. Truly, truly, truly outrageous. So thank you so much, Dan, for coming in.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate that.
A massive shout out to all our patrons again for your support, and a couple of them, the Brave and the Panel Boys, going over and above. That is wonderful. And to everyone for tuning into another episode of Toy Power, we love your support, love all the comments and feedback, and it's just wonderful having this community and being part of it
with you
guys. So we really enjoy that. On that note, we will say goodbye and hopefully see you around the toy aisles.
And Damien, just one thing, please keep us up to date with what you think when the new gem is unveiled.
Love to
hear your feedback, you know, someone who's a true fan.
Fantastic, thank you.
And to everyone listening, until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but good. Yeah.